Hello and welcome to yet another episode on the Mission Shunya podcast channel. Wherever you are, hope you are doing well. As always, I am very excited to bring to you yet another conversation around this global transition towards a zero carbon economy. Shunya, by the way, means zero in the Indian language. Just a small information for all the new listeners. But of course, if you have been following the podcast for long, thanks for your time. Hope I am adding value through the content I bring on the show. If you want me to cover any particular topic or have any recommendations for a future guest, do drop a line. missionshunya@gmail.com is the ID. Or tag me at missionshunya across Facebook, Instagram or Twitter. This week's topic is all about materials. Materials that go into creating products in the clean tech space. I'm sure you would have heard multiple arguments from people who are skeptical about the clean tech transition. They would question the sustainability of everything behind the tech. So let's debunk the myths with help from Umicore. Umicore is a global materials technology and recycling group. And what caught my attention at first was their mission statement, Materials for a Better Life. On this week's episode, we get not one, but two passionate people on the conversation from Umicore. I had the chance to meet them a few years back, and I was really impressed to hear about the work done by Umicore across the globe in ensuring sustainability across the value chain. Tom Van Billingham is VP OEM Value Chain and Marketing, and through his decade-long career at Umicore, he has been working on sourcing raw materials and now specifically working with auto manufacturers across the world on materials for batteries. Kedar Rele is Country General Manager and Director for Umicore and is responsible to lead and grow Umicore India business on clean mobility and recycling business. So on this conversation, you'll get answers to most of your questions on how large companies source materials for batteries, ensuring the ethical and sustainable value proposition, and a lot more. So without delay, let's get to the conversation. Hello, Tom and Kedar. Welcome to the Mission Shunya podcast.
Glad to be here.
Happy to be here, Grish.
So, Tom and Kedar, let's begin by looking at Umicore. For a company with a mission like Materials for a Better Life, what is the business all into and what do you do? I mean, I understand you develop, produce and recycle materials. So, how would you describe Umicore in a few sentences?
We always say that Umicore is a global materials technology and recycling group. So that means that we start from metals and then we, with our application know-how, we turn these metals into an application. And typically when this application is end of life, we close the loop by recycling the metals. I think this closed loop concept is embedded in basically everything we do. And that's really something that sets us apart from a lot of our competitors. If I look at Umicore, there are really three big pillars of activities. First pillar is catalysis. And here we use metals like platinum, palladium, rhodium, and so on to put them on a substrate. And that substrate will have then an active life in cleaning the exhaust gases from combustion engines. And here again, when this catalyst is end of life, we recycle the metals and we reuse them for new catalysts. To give you an idea, roughly one car out of three globally is driving around with a catalyst from Umicore. The second pillar is what we call energy and surface technologies. There, battery materials is for sure the biggest segment. So here also in battery materials, we take metals like cobalt, nickel, manganese, lithium. We transform that into a cathode. This cathode sees an active life in a lithium-ion battery. And when this battery is end of life, we recycle it again and we reuse it, those metals to make new cathode materials. This is the second pillar. And then the third pillar of Umicore is really what we call recycling. So this is all about recycling complex waste streams. And what is a complex waste stream? That is any input that contains a variety of typically precious metals or very complex mixes of metals. So we would recycle 17 different metals out of those flows and make new applications. So this is really what you could describe as urban mining. So we see the city as our input flow, and we recycle all kinds of devices that are part of our daily life, and we recycle the metal. So that's basically what Umicore is in a nutshell. And I really believe that if you look at our motto, Materials for a Better Life, a lot of what we do is indeed all about changing the way people transport themselves, make our environment a better environment to live in, make cleaner air, changing the way people transport themselves, communicate, entertain themselves. This is really, we're embedded in a lot of technologies that are changing our lives for the better.
That's wonderful. The reason I ask this question is because when you hear this statement from a company that's into mining and materials for a better life, considering the industry per se is going to be very energy intense, I mean, all through the process is very intense. How difficult is it for you to show that you are a leader in from a sustainability viewpoint?
So let me maybe first point out that Umicore is no longer active in mining itself. So we do have a mining history. Umicore is, let's say, a 200-year-old company, and we definitely have a mining background. But today, we don't operate any mine any longer. So we're not a mining company. A few decades ago, we made the deliberate choice to get out of mining and really focusing ourselves in on the transformation part of the business. And why is that? Typically, mining tends to be a very cyclical business. If the metal prices are right, you can make a fortune. If the metal prices are low, you should be prepared to suffer losses for several years in a row. Our business model is very different. We really want to be profitable because we add value to the metals we treat. So I think that's a little bit the perspective. But your observation that the mining is a significant contributor to overall footprint is of course correct. Huh? This is something we pay a lot of attention to. We are very much aware that the materials we process, they come with a considerable footprint. And we basically address it in two different ways. On one hand, I would say traceability. So we know exactly where we buy from. That is not only important from an ethical and a social perspective, but also from a CO2 footprint perspective. If you know the exact route the material has followed, you can also assess the exact footprint. This is one way, traceability.
True.
Another way is indeed by doing what we call LCA studies. So you really want to understand the footprint of the materials you buy by making detailed studies, like what is now the exact footprint of that specific metal, knowing that I've done a number of processing steps. I've used energy as an input. I've used reagents as an input. So what does this mean in terms of footprint of the metals I'm putting in the market? So I think this is also one of the reasons why Umicore has shifted its focus to what we call urban mining. To just give you an example, the gold ore that is mined in countries like South Africa typically contains about 5 grams of gold per metric ton of ore. A cell phone over a bunch of cell phones would contain about 200 grams of gold per metric ton. So as you can see, this is a much richer source as an input.
Wow.
At the same time, this also clearly points out the need for recycling our end-of-life portable electronics devices. At this point in time, let's say about 3 to 5% of devices are recycled at the end of life. Well, we really believe that society has to find a way to increase this device collection, because from a technology point of view, the technology is there to recover the metals very efficiently.
True.
But of course, if the collection, the first step is missing, of course, the rest of the industry cannot process. And it's really a shame to waste so many valuable metals like cobalt, like lithium and so on, where there is some consensus that the supply demand might be tight in the coming years. well, to on an annual basis to just waste tens of thousands of tons of cobalt, which would be the equivalent of the biggest cobalt mine in the world. If you could recycle that, well, I think we have to think about how we go about with these metals, and recycling can definitely contribute to or be part of the solution.
If I were just to add what Tom said, and let's just take the way Corona changed the world and the way we are consuming digital equipments, any electronic equipment, maybe your laptops, tablets. And I think there is a growing e-waste problem, which would over 3 to 5 years will come in the world, also in country like India. And how do we develop these chains? And while technology is there and Umicore offers, I think there could be also a requirement. How does the chain sets up for it? And that's where we need to focus. So I think world has recognized this fact, and we are already ready with the technology. So that's where we are positioned.
That's well said, Kedar. That brings me to my next question. I mean, it's closely related to what you do. Kedar, you kind of talk to businesses, especially in countries like India, where you're currently focused on. How do you go about convincing customers about the value that you bring to the table in terms of the sustainability that you have in the entire value chain?
Yeah, I mean, if I particularly speak India, I think there's a growing recognition of this fact that, yes, I think sustainability is key pillar. And I think the recovery which we see now today and even government approaches, I think there is a green element to it. So surely I think that's making a bit easier rather than a hard sell. But I think a lot of effort, and just not me or Umicore as a company, we need to really tackle this, but it has to be somewhere, you know, some kind of regulations would also further help. But all said and done, when you show value and what Tom talked about being LCA or being the technology and the efficiency, I think over a period of time, the recognitions is much better and higher than was earlier. So I think it's getting better here. All is set for it. But yes, there are costs to it, which we need to really understand. You cannot externalize an environmental cost. You have to build in the cost. And that's where I think these kind of recognition and these kind of acceptance will be important going forward.
That's true. Now, getting back to the way you function in terms of value chain and how you go about this, because you did say mining is off your radar now, or you're not into mining anymore. And then you have traceability as a key factor in the entire value chain. What are the other big challenges in the value chain? Because Umicore is a global company, you have materials coming from various sources. How does it typically work? Do you have centralized units?
Well, of course, Umicore is a wide consortium dealing with a few dozens of different metals. So our approach tends to be different metal by metal. If we now speaking about, for example, the battery industry, each metal has its own risk profile. That means that also each metal needs its own approach. Sometimes it's an availability risk. Sometimes it's a geopolitical risk. For example, the fact that 65% of cobalt is found in the DRC, in Congo, in Africa. Well, that's just a fact of life. Nature has put the cobalt there.
True.
At the same time, if we plan a battery industry demand, we'd probably want to take a 5 or 10 year horizon look. Well, good luck predicting the political situation in Congo 5 years down the road. It's sometimes already challenging to know what's going to happen the next 3 months. So, well, it's a fact that we have to factor in. And that means that you probably want to build in flexibility in the types of metals you can treat as an input. Over time, as we said before, we want to increase the portion of recycled metals, because recycling, I think Kedar pointed it out, it comes with several benefits. There is a sustainability benefit. There is, I think, also a geopolitical benefit in that sense that regions that over time would rely on massive recycling or closing the loop on metals to supply their own needs would no longer be dependent on other regions. And I think this is with a rising geopolitical tension in some parts of the world, this is definitely an important trend, or this technology would be an enabler for more independence. So I think these are the steps we take. So we really have an approach which is dedicated by each metal. It often comes down to flexibility, being able to take different types of input and create the same output. So this flexibility on the input side, while the same having the same high quality at the output side, I think that definitely is also a differentiator.
Yeah, just to further supplement what Tom mentioned, we as an organization has also a super sustainability framework, which starts from sourcing. And a typical example, and Tom touched upon Congo and cobalt. So around a decade ago, Umicore decided to only source materials from the players that are fully compliant. So the compliance is the kind of sourcing, the strict traceability, I think is the core at the procurement framework. And if that is not met by any ethical standards or any of the corrupt practices, then we limit that supplies. So in a way, end OEMs prefer Umicore materials because they want a cleaner supply chain. So that's also one adding to the sustainability framework.
That's really true. I mean, a lot of companies, a lot of OEMs have this commitment into their own sustainability framework as well. So it all boils down, trickles down the value chain. Now, we did hear about recycling from both Tom and Kedar. Now, what percentage of the minerals in general come from recycling for Umicore? I understand when you scale up and when year on year the demand increases. But typically, if you put X amount, what percentage of it is from recycling? Because I think when we met some time back, you did mention that one of your other interests is to kind of reduce the virgin resources extraction and in the supply chain. So what percentage is that?
If you look on a Umicore level, about 60% of the metals we process come from secondary or end-of-life sources. So this is a very large amount that really reflects the big recycling and closing the loop nature of our business. And that means about 40% comes from primary resources. I have to add that, of course, this really depends quite a lot of metal by metal. There are applications, typically precious metals, gold, where people will have a lot of recycling incentive, where recycling has been going on for decades, even ages. And there, the recycling is very well established. There are other applications where recycling is more difficult. Like we supply our battery materials in batteries for satellites. Well, a very nice application, but the practical recycling effort is getting quite difficult. The same if cobalt ends up in paint. Well, recycling paint economically doesn't make too much sense. So for some metals, recycling is always a no-brainer if you talk about platinum, gold, and so on. For other metals, recycling, the driver for recycling can be a variety of drivers. Sometimes it can be economical if the price of that metal is very high, like we've seen for lithium a few years ago. Recycling for lithium was a no-brainer at those prices. If the price collapse, well, at that point in time, the economical justification might be a bit more difficult. At the same time, there are other drivers for recycling. It could be a legal obligation to recycle, like in Europe, you have to recycle the cars you put on the market. Well, then it's regardless of the economics, you should have a recycling system in place with certain performance targets. So there are different drivers for recycling. I think CO2 can also be clearly a driver for recycling. We typically see that in metals that tend to be valuable or where the ores tend to be really containing low values of certain metals like gold, platinum, and so on, the recycled metals do come with a much lower CO2 footprint. So also in an effort to bring down the CO2 footprint of batteries and other devices, I think using more recycled sources can definitely be a big help.
That's really interesting. You bring in like three different perspectives. One is the availability of materials, minerals, and then the percentage embedded carbon in that. And then, of course, the price and the regulation behind it. So, in generally, how do you think this will go in the future? I mean, do you think it's going to be driven by regulations, or is it going to be driven by price, or is it going to be the idea that it's the embedded carbon is low? What do you think is going to drive this forward, the entire theme behind recycling?
I think the drivers will probably change over time. I think at this point in time, we see, especially for batteries, a strong legislative push. People do it because they have to do it. I think over time, and depending on the prices of metals at that point in time, on top of that, you could have an economical driver. I do believe that the CO2 is gaining importance. We see more and more car OEMs wondering, like, okay, what is the CO2 footprint of not only the use phase of a vehicle linked to the electricity that is consumed to fill up the battery, but also the production phase of the vehicle. What is now the CO2 footprint released during the production phase? And there is, of course, a tremendous amount of pressure not only to make their own processes more efficient, for example, by using green electricity, but also all their sub-suppliers to make those processes more efficient and with a lesser footprint, and recycling can definitely help there.
Kirish, just on this, and Tom really nicely summed it up, but you know, we all know that resources are scarce, and that's one big trend. And I think that itself is going to be one mega driver. And exactly. That's what also Umicore believes. And the model which Tom explained at the start, or what Umicore follows, is exactly on this. So I think resource scarcity, and many countries, you know, already are looking at critical raw materials. When Corona happened, while we all talked about globalization, now it's about somewhat like, if I say, quote unquote, deglobalization. So in that scenario, everybody will want to retain their own critical metals, whatever available. So recycling, I think, will be an increasing trend. And somewhere, I mean, we as consumers have also been sensitized about it. If you take if I take India as a case, and if you take rural India, and if I really dissect rural India as Bharat, you'll see that the villages or the towns or small towns are more sustainable and, you know, very cleaner, because they use very well the resources. Even if it is waste, they actually convert that into manure and use it. So I think somewhere rural India knows it. If we can really copy it in urban also, then I think it will be much better for us to live as a, you know, this world.
Oh, that's a wonderful little point, Kedar. You did mention about how rural India is very sustainable in a way of life. And as like Tom mentioned, urban mining is the new word that you're popularizing, if I were to put it that way. Now, on this note, I mean, I get a question, because I'm sure this question will be asked by all the OEMs and all the companies who source from you. When they source it, they might ask, when you claim that it is recycled or it comes from a sustainable source, do you have any technology that can trace it? You did mention traceability. I think I've heard a few of the companies claiming blockchain and others being very efficient in tracing the flow of materials. Is that something that you use, or you have other ways, or you just believe in your suppliers, your entire value chain, in how they process and how they refine materials?
Thanks for that question. I think that's a very relevant question that indeed comes up at different OEMs. We definitely have different systems in place to make sure that we know exactly where we buy from. I think the days where you just rely on paper declaration from somebody else are far behind us. We've never done this. We, in the industry, we saw some other players do that, but we definitely see a clear trend to much more scrutiny, following audit trails and really making sure that people know exactly where they buy from. So it's a combination of having people on the ground, so having teams in Africa for cobalt, having teams going to South America and Australia for lithium. So really making sure that you are on the ground from the mines, that you know where your feed is coming from, that you check the labor circumstances, the respect for the environment, and so on and so on. So that's personally checking. There are indeed other mechanisms. Sometimes they call it chemical fingerprinting. Typically, every mine will have its unique impurity pattern. So if you have in-depth analysis methods, you will be able to read this impurity pattern and link an ore body or a sack of ore to a specific origin. That's a second technology. And then thirdly, as you said, indeed, blockchain is a technology that indeed would allow us to indeed make sure that the traceability that is there becomes also visible at the right level, being it at the cell maker or at the OEM. So this is indeed also something that we are working up as a technology that complements the other efforts.
That's wonderful, especially the second point. I never thought that there could be this level of expertise in kind of identifying the ore level impurity and then kind of saying where this came from, which mine did this come from. That's really interesting. That's why I think it pays to be in a company like Umicore, where you have expertise of like a couple of centuries.
Exactly. Then, of course, if you've had more than 100 years experience in this field with these different metals, that, of course, contributes to the overall knowledge and indeed knowing what to look for.
Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, now you've had to ask for a company of this history and the company whose with the entire value chain, the business model is entirely around circular economy and sustainability. Do you have any targets as sustainability targets for your company as is? Do you have any targets like any year you want to have some impact? Do you have anything like that?
Yes, let's say we had clear targets for what we called our Vision 2020. We want to be a leader in clean mobility and make sustainability a competitive edge. We're now working on our next vision, and there we expect to make these targets even more tangible, and that indeed we will hopefully come out like other companies with more science-based targets. So we have to have a bit more patience, and then I think Umicore will be able to announce what our plans are in that field.
That's interesting. I'm sure you wouldn't have to look a long way. You would definitely have a long list of targets that you can choose from and then probably say, okay, this is going to be a high reach, but we will definitely get there.
One common gear, I think often, and this is something people might overlook, economical targets and ecological targets can be perfectly aligned. If I look at our processes that we use to make battery materials, they're very electricity intensive. So for us, giving our engineering team a design target where we say like, okay, you have to reduce the amount of electricity per kilogram produced product by X is on one hand an economical target because it will allow us to save money, but at the same time also an ecological target. So typically in let's say energy intensive industries, and metal processing can definitely be one of those industries, there those targets or those goals can be perfectly aligned. So it's not that they're opposite forces.
Exactly. Very true. You kind of have two things, two targets in one common statement, both ecological and economical. That's nice. Not many companies actually can claim to get to that level. In fact, they would have to have two separate targets.
You know, Girish, in terms of battery material supply, what Tom said was a big point, actually, which not only means material and design and, you know, the flow, but we can actually offer with our new setup in Europe, actually a feed of energy which is renewable. So actually what will get produced and the energy being used there is from the hydroelectricity. So that's going to be also something to look out when the battery materials flow into the OEM chain and the whole footprint is calculated on carbon.
Oh, that's nice, Kedar. And perfectly leads me to my next question. For a company that deals with all the minerals and all the materials that goes into battery for electric vehicles, I mean, the general question or the general myth, if I were to put it that way, is do we have enough lithium? Do we have enough minerals to kind of build big, large-scale batteries that can go into electric cars that come in the future? How would you debunk this?
I think, indeed, a question that comes back quite frequently. Umicore battery materials, we are launching, let's say, a campaign of, let's say, 8 common myths around electric vehicles. And indeed, one of the myths was indeed that there's not going to be enough lithium or cobalt to build all the EVs that society might need. I think we have to look at 3 different aspects in this. First of all, the automotive industry in general has a much longer planning cycle than typically portable electronics has. Automotive companies are used to think 5 years ahead for launching new platforms, 10 years ahead in terms of like how long these platforms will last and so on and so on, what that means in terms of volumes. So better visibility and I think better alignment along the supply chain to pass on this visibility along the supply chain will help for new investments. Secondly, I also believe that recycling will help. And then thirdly, let's not forget that the industry has shown enormous technical flexibility to keep with or to deal with certain shortages of certain metals. We've seen that several times when the cobalt price spiked. Very soon after, you saw all kinds of clever chemistries popping up where the portion of cobalt was being reduced. This is definitely something where the industry tends to be flexible. This is, of course, not something from 1 week to the next that you can easily change that, but there is a trend to be much more aware of the availability of these metals long-term. I think, of course, lithium ion is not going to work without lithium. I think the good news is that there is still a tremendous amount of lithium available both in South America and in Australia. There are plenty of junior miners, we call them, new projects that are popping up really all over the globe, in Africa, in Europe, in all different types of the world. You see lithium projects popping up. So I'm personally convinced that there are enough lithium atoms out there. It's a matter of making sure that the investment climate is there to make sure that indeed these projects do mature and to give some visibility in terms of offtake. So I think if we manage to give that to the miners, I really believe that more projects will come online and that the existing players will continue to expand their production facilities.
That's wonderful. That's a good way to kind of debunk this, because you go right from the idea that you will not have enough lithium, but to where how automakers kind of tried different chemistries. As you rightly said, the cobalt content has gradually been coming down, and few people claim that they can go to lithium batteries without cobalt as well. So it's a wonderful future that we all can look forward to, and I'm sure the myth will kind of be debunked soon.
Kirish, you mentioned something really important on the zero cobalt, and it's a trend we see in the market, but that trend is often the result of 2 opposite forces within OEMs. There is typically the board level force that will say like, well, cobalt has some sustainability concerns. We hear very well-known EV companies announcing that they would go zero cobalt, so we have to do that as well. That's then the board force. And then another opposite force is typically the technical teams that say, yeah, listen, there are some clear advantages in using cobalt in batteries. So cobalt is used for good reasons in terms of performance, capacity, cycle life, power, you name it. And the benefits you get by adding a few percent cobalt, those benefits are definitely so high that they would definitely pay for the price of those cobalt units. So that's a little bit then the technical force. So, but it's a debate that's going on in a lot of OEMs and cell companies at this point in time. And it's a clear sign on how public opinion can influence the debate. I think a lot of the pressure to move away from cobalt is coming from public opinion that has made a certain image about cobalt sourcing, which is often, I would say, not always in line with the reality. I think the reality is that a large portion of cobalt is mined in circumstances which are perfectly acceptable, where I would have not a second of doubt to take my customers to those mines and show them the exact working conditions in those large operated mines where people work with automated equipment, they wear their protective equipment, and so on and so on. So this is the reality, but there is indeed a small fraction of cobalt which is mined in not okay circumstances. Umicore is not buying those sources, but that image radiates off to the whole industry. And I think these changing public opinions might have an even stronger influence on society going forward. If you see the activity, Youth for Climate, so protest against pollution, I think also the way typically the internet generation looks towards owning a car versus renting it, or having different transport models. I think a lot of that is going to change in the next years. Like car sharing and so on will have a tremendous impact on our whole industry, I believe.
That's a very interesting point. I mean, it definitely was a very powerful point if I were to say it that way, because not many could have made this as convincing like the way you did, and that clearly shows that Umicore as a company is both a technology player and also a player who understands the business, the entire value chain. And that's a very convincing argument, and I'm sure that will help people understand the real dynamics of the large OEMs and how everything plays out in the open. Tom and Kedar, it was an absolute pleasure, but before I let you go, you did mention about the significance of recycling and why is it so important in terms of having the minerals really conserved. What would your tip be to anyone, any common man, common citizen listening to this podcast? How can they be more eco-conscious and do some small act that can have a positive impact in their lives?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of different steps people can take. It's about considering your lifestyle, maybe eat a little bit less meat, be very conscious about the way you travel, but also very practically, like if your smartphone is end of life, well, just don't throw it in the garbage. Make sure it gets back to a kind of a recycling point where people do take proper care about it and make sure those resources are not wasted. And very important also mention it. If you go into a shop and ask a question, and I think in a country like India, where the population is quite big, if only 1% of consumers would start asking these kind of questions, this would be a tsunami of input from the market to the people that make products, and they would be so much more aware that people do care about that. And I think that can be a very powerful force to change the industry, because people will always listen to what their customers say. They might listen to what their suppliers say, but they will definitely listen to what their customers are saying.
I think really powerful, Tom, you said. And that's true. I think if consumers and we all each, as we are consumer ourselves, I think if we can do that bit of just managing to live a lifestyle which at least helps the environment in minimalistic way being affected, and whatever we consume, if we can see that it finds a route to be recycled and demand for it, I think a lot can change in this world and support what we started with urban mining. So that's my thought.
That's wonderful. A powerful statement from both of you to kind of end this insightful conversation. And it's been an absolute pleasure having both Tom and Kedar, and of course, representing Umicore and talking about what goes behind in building a closed loop circular economy value chain, in especially in a crucial sector, handling materials for batteries and other consumer electronics and every gadgets that goes into our homes. So thanks for taking time to join me on the podcast.
Thanks a lot for having us. It was really a pleasure.
Thank you, Girish.
So that was yet another insightful conversation on the Mission Chunya podcast. Hope you found it useful. You can find out more about Umicore by visiting their website, umicore.com. You can connect with our guests Tom and Kedar on LinkedIn. The links, as usual, will be in the podcast description and on the website missionchunya.com. And if you like the story, give a rating and write a review on Apple Podcast. Share it with 3 people in your network. It just takes like 30 seconds. And it definitely helps in getting the message to a wider audience. So with that, this is Girish Shivakumar signing off. And as always, thank you for listening.